Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to our Action Research Podcast, created by the HEAR Lab team at the University of Houston. The HEAR Lab is the hub for engaged action research, and the mission of the lab is to build the capacity of scholars to create and disseminate collaborative, accessible, anti-racist research that centers community and fuels social change. Through hosting different activities such as walk and learns, webinars, or disseminating one-page research briefs, the team hopes to amplify research beyond articles and connect scholars to one another. Research should be done to create an impact, and by hosting this podcast, the hope is to have more awareness around anti-racist research approaches, as well as seeing how research goes beyond articles to connect to practice and policy. Today, we welcome organizational consultant, award-winning educator, speaker, and licensed social worker, Ms. Abba Brown. She is a former professor at the University of Houston Graduate College of Social Work and is a co-founder of the Collective Experience Group, a consulting firm that supports capacity development in organizations as well as individuals seeking to become more effective and justice-oriented in their work. And she uses connections between art and science to address inequities and systems to foster institutional and interpersonal change. Our next guest is Marjorie A. Joseph, a leader, visionary, advocate, and the originator of the hashtag Justice Over Equity framework, established to facilitate societal and cultural shifts and transformation. Marjorie, known to many as MJ, is currently an American Leadership Forum Fellow and a member of the Young Center's Art and Exhibitions Committee. Marjorie currently serves as the executive director for Houston Coalition Against Hate, HCAH, which is a network of community-based organizations, institutions, and leaders who come together to reduce hate and encourage belonging. HCAH does this through education, research, relationship building, and prevention initiatives, as well as partnering with organizations to host events that celebrate Houston's diversity. Finally, we have Zoe. Zoe obtained her bachelor's degree in corporate communications from the University of Texas and holds her LMSW with an emphasis on politics, which was obtained from the University of Houston Graduate College of Social Work. Zoe currently works as the director of special projects at Emerge Fellowship, a nonprofit working to expand college access for high-performing students from low-income communities. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Today, we look forward to hearing how your research is grounded in anti-racist research practices, how the team disseminates research findings, and action steps. Let's begin by having you all briefly share with our listeners what your research focuses on.
Thanks, Anil. Glad to be here. So this research was focused on really assessing the response capacity that community-based organizations currently have to respond to hate crimes when they occur. We also looked at what was necessary in order to build that capacity up for community-based organizations. Oftentimes, these organizations are the first place where somebody that has been victimized will go. They're trusted by the community, and they certainly work with vulnerable populations, those that we know are maybe subject to a hate crime. And so we wanted to know what people that work in these organizations, how they feel they have, whether they feel they have the capacity to respond to hate crimes, and what, if anything, could be done to strengthen that capacity.
Thank you for sharing that. And it's wonderful to hear how the team is building capacity in community-based organizations to respond to hate crimes. It's clear that the team has a very intentional process in conducting research by really cultivating this supportive relationship with law enforcement and with community while also creating sustainable models for training and organizations. Marjorie, as a community agency representing Houston Coalition Against Hate, why is it important that this work be grounded in anti-racist practices?
So the reason why the work of the coalition is grounded in anti-racism is because we believe that everything that is happening when it comes to injustices, when it comes to systemic exclusion, and oppression is a result of racism. And so if our goal is to eradicate hate and to encourage belonging, then we believe that we need to actively be changing policy and helping to transform behaviors and beliefs, which ultimately is about transforming culture, because it is the ideas and the actions of individuals that perpetuate racism.
And we had spoken earlier outside of this, right? One thing that you also mentioned was the Houston Coalition Against Hate is very focused on justice over equity. Could you tell me a little bit about that versus anti-racist practices?
Sure. So our justice over equity framework was created in response to DEI policies. DEI has been around since, I believe, the mid-60s. It is not new, even though some of us are just now learning about it. And so for the coalition, we truly believe that DEI is not the way to go. And all these years, we've had some change, but not enough of the change that we want to see. So we ask our coalition members to institute a justice statement in lieu of DEI policies.
Awesome. And just in case for listeners who may not know, DEI stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion, correct?
Exactly. And then some folks will do JEDI, which puts a justice in front of that, or DEIB, which puts belonging at the end.
Perfect. Thank you. And Zoe, I'm going to come to you.
As a recent graduate, share with us your role in all of this.
Hi, Neil. Great question. So I feel really lucky. I was a research assistant on this project, but I never really felt like an assistant. We really all, the five of us, had an equal role in putting this project together. It took every single one of us, and something that we really intentionally did beforehand is we wrote positionality statements. So I know for me personally, I'm Jewish. So hate crime has always been a huge part of my liturgy. I've had not hate crimes committed against me, but what I now know to be is hate incidents from a very young age. And it's a part of my cultural history and trauma as the daughter or granddaughter, excuse me, of Holocaust survivors. And so with that, we were all really grounded in our perspectives as well as our biases as we entered into this research. But I can say that it was truly a team effort from the professors and the research assistants as well.
Thank you all for sharing your different perspectives. It's really exciting to hear why the research is done, how the research is being conducted, and the process really from different perspectives. How it's been a team effort with no one person saying this is what needs to happen, but really the collaboration which underlines the community. So now that we've heard a little bit about what I would want to hear about how this contributes to social justice from each of your own perspectives.
That's a good question, Anil. And I think fundamentally hate is the undercurrent of injustice, right? And, you know, what was interesting with this study, we put a timeline in our paper that describes the legislation that we've seen over the years related to hate crime. And what was really important is that timeline began with the acknowledgement that for centuries, identity-based hate crime, what we now know as hate crime, but identity-based crime was legal. It was legal to be violent with somebody based on their identity. It was legal to exclude people based on their gender. It was legal to exclude people based on their religion. And so when we think about that history, it's very important that we bring that context into the conversation, because we have fundamentally built our society on principles of injustice that we now see as unjust. And so doing this research, one, allows us to give voice to folks that do a lot of the supportive work, that folks that are working towards social justice, right? These are the people that are in the organizations, they're working with victims, clients every day. They're on the streets and they are seeing the result of injustice in individual lives. And so I think this research gives voice to their experiences in many ways. It validates, it consolidates many of their, what we found was that there's a tremendous amount of commonality, whether you work at a large organization or a small organization, grassroots or very established, the feelings around needing a definition of hate and hate incident and hate crime, needing to know who you need to elevate a situation to should it occur to somebody that is a client or a member of your organization. So the way that this work really furthers justice, I think in many ways, is giving voice to the people that work every day towards social justice who aren't really acknowledged as those that are sojourning towards that. So I think in that way, it uplifted their experience, but also it puts the truth of the matter is that for centuries, identity-based crime was legal and happened with impunity. And so it's only been in the last several decades that we've seen a move towards, based on the work of advocates and folks that have challenged the law, we've only seen that move in the last couple of decades to actually have criminal penalty for hate crime. And that differs state to state. Federal differs from local. These are all the things that we found out. So this is just part of the journey, right? Giving voice to the folks that are doing the work, but also really putting front and center the fact that although we are working towards something that we consider to be an injustice now, this was normalized for hundreds of years. And so it's very important that we acknowledge that so that we understand what we're working with. And you know, changing law doesn't change hearts and minds. And so I'm hopeful that this research, based in the way that we did it and the central focus on the voice of those that are doing this work, hopefully creates some of that push to change hearts and minds. We took this research to law enforcement organizations. We presented this to them. We did not hold back on what we found or the truth that was spoken, and use the quotes from the people that do the work. And so we're hopeful that this starts even more conversations. And I think the coalition is working on those things.
And I know Marjorie or Zoe, whoever wants to be able to share next, right? I think what I'm hearing from ABBA is how closely this is knitted into policy and legislation. So whoever wants to be able to share again in terms of the work that we do and the perspective of social justice, how it's intertwined with policy and legislation.
Sure. Thanks, Anil. And ABBA so eloquently said all of how it connects to social justice. But this research has provided clear, practical steps forward to bring balance to systemic exclusion of many peoples, of many communities, of many groups. And so I stopped using the term marginalized because it is clear that this is systemic. Like ABBA said, this was legal, right? It was legal to do acts of hate against individuals and groups of people. Now, in the state of Texas, you talked about, you know, policy and legislation. In the state of Texas, hate crimes are an enhancement. And the laws for prosecuting hate crimes vary from state to state. So it's also difficult to identify a hate crime unless there is some sort of physical evidence that is seen at the crime scene or that's provided by the victim if it's an identity-based crime at the time of reporting. So I think advocating for this to no longer be an enhancement, and also the other fact that I'd like to share is that this is not, reporting of hate crimes by law enforcement agencies is not mandatory, right? So it would be good to advocate for reporting of hate crimes to be mandatory. The FBI, I think, released their report just today, and they were showing on quick glance that it seems like we had less this year. And we know that that's just not the case, right? And it also showed that a lot of LEAs this year chose not to report. So I think advocating for mandatory reporting from our law enforcement agencies is also key when it comes to hate crimes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Zoe, do you want to jump in briefly?
Yeah, I think I could just share that I think a lot of this research, the idea of accountability came up, and there's just such a lack of accountability when it comes to hate crimes, both from law enforcement and reporting and process. And I think there's a real opportunity to codify processes because obviously here in Texas, and we know we're not even the worst, we have a different process than in other places. And I think something that I always think about, this is a little cheesy, so I'm sorry, but I don't necessarily think the opposite of love is hate. I think that it's indifference. And I do believe that if we educate people about others, there will be less hate. So just an opportunity to educate people about, you know, different cultures and ethnicities and all of those things that create hate in the first place, which typically comes from a place of fear or indifference.
Fantastic. And I can't even begin to sum up the amazing words that you all just shared. So I want to talk about, right, we're talking about systems, we're talking about different challenges. I'm going to take it to the research area in terms of, right, dissemination. This work is being done. How is it being shared out? How do people know about this? How do they hear about it?
Sure. So Abba started to share how he shared it, but this research has been shared with the participants, has been shared internally with our coalition members. As Abba mentioned earlier, we shared it with local law enforcement agencies. So that would be police departments, local FBI, the Department of Justice. And we went public with the release of this in August 22. So this report currently is downloadable for free at HoustonAgainstHate.org. And if you go under our work and then you select reports, you'll be able to download this report for free. And Abba, feel free if I left anything out to share.
And MJ and Abba, if you guys want to go back and forth, that's totally fine.
No, I think all of those things. And I think for us, it was very important to prioritize the folks who participated in the study first to make sure that we got it right, you know, that what we said really resonated with them and respected the truth that they shared, because there was incredible amounts of courage that people put forth to share and answer some really tough questions. But like MJ said, we have law enforcement organizations, other social service organizations looking to do this work. The report is also on the Graduate College of Social Work's website. We also did a press release, got picked up by several magazines, both local and national. And so, and had some very good responses with regard to what we found doing the lit review is that there's not a lot of research that's been done on the community-based organizations that respond often to hate crimes. There's a lot of research about what's happening and not much about who actually is taking care of the people, who's helping folks navigate the system. And so this is a body of research we think is important to expand and grow, because what we found in doing this work is that folks that work in community-based organizations are eager to know what are the best practices that we can implement to best support the folks that we serve. There is a lot of desire out there to know. And just to kind of intersect the last two questions together, most people don't know the legal apparatus and navigation of the system that happens, right? Most people don't know that in Texas, as Marjorie indicated before, hate crime is an enhancement and has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm. So often attaching hate crime to a crime that the victim knows was a hate crime and even the police may know is a hate crime puts the burden of proof at a higher level. So you could potentially not be able to convict somebody of what they've done because you've attached hate crime to it. And this also contributes to underreporting of hate crimes. It's harder to prove, it's harder to convince a jury of. And so a lot of times prosecutors won't actually prosecute something as a hate crime. And we're, you know, we continue to seek other opportunities to disseminate the information. And I think, again, the coalition being the sponsor of this research and then utilizing the research to inform the direction of their work is so important and gives life to the research in a way that goes beyond sitting in a library somewhere for someone to find.
And I think, you know, coming from the Action Research podcast, that's why I'm really excited to host you all and have you all here. I want to wrap this up with some action steps that our listeners can take after hearing about this work.
That's a great question. So, like Abba just mentioned, all of our research is not used, is used to direct our work moving forward. So we don't do research for the sake of research to be done and to just have it sit. So our next steps are that we have been identified as neutral conveners by our community, by our coalition members, and we just culminated strategic planning this year. And we have been blessed to receive a grant from the DOJ to partner with HPD. And so some of the action steps that the coalition will be taking is to provide, to create and develop curriculum and to provide training to law enforcement agencies. And on one side, and on the other side, to also provide trainings to our CBOs, to our community-based organizations, to help institute a uniform system of response to hate and to help get a pulse on what our resources are within the community and what, and do a mapping of our ecosystem. What others can do is we are looking for more funding to continue to underwrite the work. And we are looking for folks to advocate and engage with their local, state, and federal representatives, you know, for mandatory reporting and for the elimination of hate crimes as an enhancement. So these are some things that folks can do, and just supporting organizations like the coalition and donating to our website is helpful. So thanks.
I think another thing for folks to consider is if there's interest in learning more about this, the last page of the report has 7 recommendations. So anyone that works in an organization that may encounter somebody that has been victimized by a hate crime, or even an organization that works to advocate for fairness and justice and equity, the steps that we have included in there, those 7 recommendations, are, I won't say they're clear, and they are really good questions to ask of your organization, right? So an organization that is working towards justice should have a definition of hate. They should be able to define that. Mm-hmm. That was one of the hardest and most complicated questions that we wrestled with through this research research study. So looking at those 7 recommendations and saying, where does my organization sit in these 7 recommendations? And are there ways for us to get involved with organizations like the Houston Coalition Against Hate? Are there ways to implement or to incorporate these recommendations into our existing infrastructure? And at a minimum, they're good questions to start asking yourself as an organization. Do we know how to respond to things? You know, we in Houston, what we found is that people could talk about response protocols to hurricanes. They could talk about response protocols now to ice storms or pandemics, right? That these were all kind of planes that folks built as they flew them. But when we said, what is your response protocol for something heinous happening in our city? Folks didn't know. So this is, it's a good place to start, right? Look at those 7 recommendations and just really assess where are we as an organization in this space and start asking yourself those questions and having those conversations.
Yeah. Zoe, then MJ, I didn't know if you had anything to add.
Yeah, I can just add that I think something we came across too is, well, 2 things. One, if you're dealing with clients who are experiencing hate crimes, to think about that, but also think about your employees. Is there something in place for your employees to report hate crimes or hate incidents? And also, is there something you're doing to help them deal with the trauma? Because even reading about these or talking to people, is really triggering. So are we supporting the people that work in community-based organizations to deal with hate crimes on a regular basis? And the last thing I would say is, don't fall asleep. You know, it seems like every other day we have a hate crime happening, and it's easy to say that this is normal or this just happens, but it's not normal. So to just keep talking about it and telling people that it's not normal and not allowing yourself to not pay attention.
Okay. And MJ, bring us home.
So I want to piggyback on actually something that Zoe said. So when we're looking at the impact that this work has on folks who are helping or doing direct service work, but also internally in organizations, how folks are navigating microaggressions or subtle acts of exclusion, as Dr. Tiffany Jana likes to say. There is a feeling that, you know, EDs and CEOs are not partaking in trainings and workshops that can be instrumental in shifting the culture of an organization. So it's a call to our EDs and our CEOs to really have a pulse on what is going on under your watch internally within your own institution and organization.
Thank you all for being here. And it's just so wonderful. Again, that's why we enjoy bringing different perspectives, because not only do we hear from the community, do we hear from the research aspects, but how this is going to be placed from practitioner view and put in place from executive directors and CEOs to interact with, but also, like you were saying, Abba, about what an organization can do right now when looking at the overall picture. So thank you all for being here and being able to share about the amazing work you do. The HEAR Lab team is here to connect with scholars and community to amplify voices in research. We look forward to connecting with listeners through their reflection and conversations. If you see public impact scholarship occurring in your community, tag us. Let us know. Stay in touch or share your thoughts by tagging us on Twitter at #GCSWHEARLab. Rate our show, leave us a review, and subscribe so you can learn about all things HEAR Lab and can cultivate change in research procedures, policy, and impact practice. This is your host, Anil Arora, signing off, living the dream.